Okay, this is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access our shows live or as podcast by going online to KUCI.org or on our website, which is MG, as in Master Gardener, orange.ucanr.edu. Or just Google Master Gardeners of Orange County, California. Be sure and put California in there. This is the In the Garden show, produced by the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. I'm DC Morgan, your host this morning, and with me is Lynn Hillman, who is a horticulturist and a landscape designer. And we're here today at Rogers Garden, a wonderful oasis in our urban area. This week, we're going to talk about what makes us go into our gardens. Lynn, I'm going to let you take it from here. I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Okay, you had asked me to say a bit about myself.
Yes.
So, very briefly, I started out with my education in fine art, and that's where my degree originally was. 50, I got bored with what I was doing, went back to school and educated myself in landscape design and ornamental horticulture. And I have been very, very happy with that ever since because it does incorporate art along with living items and an active involvement in our world.
Yes.
So that's why I stay here. And also now I'm at Rogers Gardens and have been for 10 years and absolutely love it. This is a beautiful place, as you said. So thank you. I was thinking about when you asked me to give a talk, I was thinking about what to say. And I decided to talk about what makes me want to go into the garden. And so what I decided is that they're kind of our universal things. But with me, what pulls me in, knowing that tonight I will have a sore back, my arms will be bleeding, and et cetera, I go anyway. And so the top thing on that line is serenity. Then after that, connectedness. Just stepping onto the earth with my bare feet lowers my heart rate. The challenge of it, curiosity. What's going to happen? Who's there now? And what's coming up and what's dying back? Seasonal change with its connectedness to everything. Inviting the critters into my garden and watching how it all works together. These are the things that pull me in.
Yes, I really like what you said about curiosity. I get up every morning and I have my coffee and I get out there and I go, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And what's changed? It's amazing. It's got a busy world going on out there.
It is. And particularly if you get up in the morning, that's when a lot of activity occurs.
Early morning.
Yeah, me too. So where do we start? Many people start with an existing landscape. Either we moved into one or years ago we planted one. Now the desire has arisen to make it different. Changing weather patterns, newfound plant palette, newfound enthusiasm. Whatever the reason is, somehow we've decided to change it or add to it. But where to start? With a plan, of course. But what is the basis for a plan? In my case, it was a desire to create a dynamic environment. Let me explain that. When I moved into my home, the front was three plants, a boxwood hedge, a shade tree, and a lawn. The back was lawn and a carrotwood tree on the flat part, and a Monterey pine, well, several Monterey pines, and a Melaleuca tree on the slope with Cape Honeysuckle and Cape Plumbago underneath. Nothing much happened in that garden.
Kind of like the contractor standard package landscape, right?
Yeah, from 1973, yes. The elm tree in front did give a hint of seasons, but that was pretty much it. Being a Southern California girl, I wanted to experience a little more than that, a little more of what people elsewhere call seasonal change. The elm did that, so I kept it. I did not want to mow a lawn or edge hedges, though. In the back, I love the Monterey pines, but I was nervous about the carrotwood being so close to the house and the two ground-covering plants had turned into rambling thickets. I removed the lawns front and back, the carrotwood, cut back the ground cover in the back, removed the hedges in the front and added a low-flow watering system with a weather sensor and added a pond with a gurgling fountain out back. The plants I added were chosen for climate appropriateness, of course, food for me and for the critters, and because I was taken by their beauty or their curiousness, their oddity. I have a weakness for odd-looking plants. I paid attention to lessons I had received in school regarding diversity of plantings for a healthier garden. One way to ensure that there are epidemics of disease and hordes of plant-destroying insects is to have what is called monoculture. If there is a disease that attacks, say, boxwood, and all you have is boxwood, then that disease is guaranteed to destroy the whole garden.
Right. We don't want that.
No. I also learned this when I was taking classes in arboriculture, and this has been one of the problems with city trees around our country. There's been monoculture or close to it in a lot of cities. If there is a diversity of plants, however, then there will be a diversity of insects and others that eat the insects and so on, and there will be a more balanced ecosystem, even if it's just our backyard.
Right. That's okay. It's our own world there.
Mm-hmm. So when I garden, I clear weeds and remove any with seed heads, but mostly I leave small clippings and all leaf fall on the ground for ground insects and burrowers and for mulch. If you have deciduous trees and you are raking up the leaves and putting that in the trash, then you're throwing away money because that's good mulch.
Yeah, you just have to get your mindset, psych yourself up. These are good leaves.
Right, yeah.
They're not messy leaves.
Trees like to recycle their own chemistry. So anyway, I'm big on saving money, and I think it looks prettier that way too. So when I had to cut down two of the pines for safety, I left some of the logs on the slope where they fell. Now I have carpenter bees. There's a little kitchen garden and grapes, which are shared generously, overly generously, with the opossum family that lives under the lemonade berry and fruit trees.
You're such a good person.
Well, they are pretty cute, particularly the babies.
Yeah.
I cut back to a few inches the plumbagos to give vista to the depth of the slope and accented by the larger plants at the top half, Aleppo pines now, acacias, lemonade berry, and a California hollyberry, or toyon, which I've just planted. Up close, I've given in to my habit of falling in love with plants and taking them home and then deciding if I have a place to put it. That's a problem sometimes.
You put them in pots then or give them to neighbors, or you always find a spot?
Oh, never. I always find a spot.
That's great.
Generally, there are showy, these are showy plants, and in some way bring in butterflies, bees, birds, or just are visually satisfying. Since these are at the bottom of the slope, I can enjoy activity around these plants up close. The pond with the gently flowing water in the middle has turned out to be one of my better ideas. I've been treated to the sight of a red-shouldered hawk, an egret, a heron, clusters of bees, dragonflies, local songbirds and jays and hummers having a bath, not to mention the water lilies that my friend Steve Hampson has given to me with sparks of brilliant color all around. The fact is, I have provided water, food, cover, nesting sites and material for many critters in the garden, and endless entertainment for myself. And that's what I mean by dynamic.
Very dynamic.
There's always something happening out there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Getting that balance, that eco-balance and the diversity, that is, we all need that. That's great.
So I made a sitting spot, partly obscured, from which I can enjoy observing the activity without being obtrusive, which is nice. I'm kind of hidden by the pine trees. I love that I can be a bit smug in knowing that the seasons have changed even when the calendar hasn't yet called it. My garden told me about it.
I like that.
I do, too.
Yeah, it already almost feels like a different season right now.
It is.
The last 2 days. Yeah.
It's changing to fall now.
Yeah.
Well, when the orb weaver spiders come out, you know it's fall is right there. Yeah. Right. So I feel a part of what's going on, a connectedness in a way which is really, really satisfying to me. That's why I go into my garden. People have different priorities for their gardens. Showcase, experimental, ease of maintenance, flowering abundance. But whatever the priority and aesthetic, there is room, I believe, to provide for our local birds, bees, and butterflies, and critters of four and more legs. People often talk of giving back, particularly those in my generation of a certain age. Well, this is an easy and satisfying way to give back, and it's up close and it's personal. Sometimes people ask me when I'm helping them with their gardens, well, what are your favorite plants? I would have to say, if I were redoing my whole garden, starting from scratch, the first two things I'd put in would be a pomegranate and a Cleveland sage. The pomegranates, they give me no grief at all. They grow like the weeds that they are, and they are wonderful. That is a pun. In that way, they do grow like weeds. I love the fruit. The opossums, raccoons, and birds seem not to bother them with their tough rind, and the leaves in the fall, they turn a brilliant golden color, which contrasts beautifully with the oak tree, and they are a terrific mulch.
And beautiful bloom.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, yeah. That red just pops.
Yes, yeah.
And I think there's no finer flavor.
And they're so beautiful. They're like little jewels in a salad.
They are, yes. So then the other one, the Cleveland sage, it has the best scent in the world. I just have found no scent that I like better, even roses. The rangy branching of old ones is gorgeous. The birds love the seeds. And the cool color of the leaves is pretty, as are the purple pom-pom flowers. They're sort of silly looking above the plant.
Yes, I know. And that's a really favorite. It's a native, so it's a California native.
It is.
And I tried to grow one, but I didn't know at the time you shouldn't water them in the summer.
Yes and no. They do appreciate some water in the summer. You can get carried away with that.
I overwater in the summer because they're a native, so they're used to the fall-winter rains coming.
True.
And a dry summer. So, but I know it's a favorite. That Cleveland sage is wonderful.
Yeah, and the little birds will come and pick the seeds out of the spent flower heads.
Oh, very nice.
Okay, right next to that, and up above, starting up my slope, is a smallish area, which I have anchored by a variegated agave americana and a pineapple guava. Again, something to eat. That is a butterfly and hummingbird garden. In that garden, I have asclepias, of course, lantana, because it's always blooming, Santa Barbara daisy, again, it's always blooming, and that little white bobbing around on its thread head is charming. Euphorbia mellii, again, it's always blooming with a giant, very large corally red flowers is a nice pop in the garden. Salvia skyscraper series in orange and pink. Mm-hmm. California fuchsia has that bright firecracker orange flower. Naked lady amaryllis. Cochlea, big yellow moon, is a stunning ground cover. If no one's tried that yet, it's really wonderful with its little yellow button flowers that stand up.
I'll have to try that. I'm looking for a good ground cover.
So. Oh, yeah. That's an excellent one. Assorted dwarfing lavenders. Ceanothus Yankee Point with its lavender flower in the spring. Rhamnia coulteri, which is spreading madly, and it stands 6 feet high with those gorgeous fried egg flowers.
Fried egg flower plant, I remember that.
Uh-huh. Oh, the bumblebees adore that one, and it's so fun to watch them land on it, because then the whole flower stalk dives for the ground with the weight of them. They're fun. And then I have also Gara, of course. Butterflies love that one. So do the bees.
It looks so wispy in the wind as it blows. And it was one of Sunset Magazine's top.
Was it?
Low water, flowering.
Yeah, weed. It's so easy to grow.
Yeah.
That,
again, like a weed.
Yeah. That with your buckwheat is easy, easy, and requires almost no water. And it's one of the primary pollinators for a lot of our local insects, the buckwheat is. And then Leucospermum high gold, which comes from Australia. Okay, it's not native to here, but it is awfully gorgeous. And its bright gold, huge pom-pom flowers are stunning when held above the Cotyla big yellow moon ground cover with its little bitty gold flowers in
and
little buttons.
What was
button.
The common name on that one?
The Leucospermum high gold.
Okay.
It's a pincushion flower.
Okay. All right.
And then, of course, my Salvia clevelandii.
Oh, yes.
So, in that, and then I've just started planting Iconops ruthenticus, which has, it's a globe thistle is what its common name is, and it has blue pompon flowers. Mm-hmm. I have a thing for flowers that look like pompons.
Sounds like it.
See, it made you laugh. That's exactly why. I think they're silly. I like silly things in the garden. So that's it.
That's great.
So something is always in bloom in that area, and or seed. And the birds and butterflies know about it. And it is right next to the pond where they can wash off after a meal. Notice there's a high number of natives that I've just listed off. That is on purpose.
I love it.
When I started this garden, when I first moved in there, I was still at school learning. And it wasn't so. But as I've been there longer and longer, I'm transitioning, moving out plants and replacing them with things that are more suited to Mission Viejo.
Okay.
And it's awfully hot summers. And, but we do get good winters and good rain there backed up against the Saddleback Mountain Range. So, I am fortunate to have a larger garden so that I can usually find space for just one more. And when I make mistakes, it's a learning experience rather than an embarrassment because nobody but me knows about it. But even in a small patio or porch garden, the same ideas can translate. The same flowers which make us happy can be put in pots and can feed the locals. A small fountain or bird bath is soothing to us and gives water to the locals. Hanging plants give the feeling of height without having to plant a tree. And this will give a safe place for birds to preen and to nest. In preparing for this talk, I asked some of my gardening friends what brings them into their garden. There were a lot of answers, as you might guess, but one was universal. Again, it was the top of my personal list, which was serenity. Those of us who garden know that we can detach ourselves from the greater world by focusing on the smaller world of our gardens. Those of us who garden know that we can detach ourselves from the greater world by focusing on the smaller world of our gardens. I said it twice on purpose because just writing that sentence causes me to breathe in a deep cleansing sigh.
Me too. I'm getting little goosebumps.
Me too.
And exhaling.
Good. So creating habitat for monarchs, birds, lizards, and adding to carbon sequestration are all noble goals with which many of us are concerned, as well we should be. But it is that sense of serenity that our gardens give to us that is an important part of its reward, without which I think many of us would not be drawn into the garden.
Right.
So that's my feeling about why I garden, why many people do garden. Now, you had asked me.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to ask you. I noticed on your website you talk about the food for the monarch butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that our numbers are down like 97% on the monarch.
98.5%.
Oh, gosh. We've got to rebuild that. And what we need to do is give them the right kind of food. Milkweed is the common name. The botanical name is Asclepias vesicularis is the California native one, but there's also another one called Indian milkweed. They need that because they lay their eggs on it. The eggs become
Caterpillar.
Caterpillar, which eats the leaves of, that is the key, the leaves of the milkweed.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to their chrysalis and then come back out as another monarch. And there's been a bad protozoan disease mm-hmm. that's been found on the tropical milkweed, which is the orange one. So that's what we're trying to dissuade and get people to take it out of their garden and to go with the two native ones.
A native milkweed, which will benefit the...
Right. The native doesn't have this disease. It kills the monarchs, caterpillars, and butterflies. The native is a good one. Now, the bad one that gets, it's not bad, but it gets this disease, the protozoan disease, is orange. It's called tropical. It's orange.
May I go into the reasons?
Yes, please.
For it, if we have time.
Yeah, tell our audience.
Okay, Asclepias, to tropical or not to tropical. There is controversy. The discussion regarding whether or not to plant tropical milkweed, Asclepias curassavica, in Orange County, has two sides to it. However, the science behind it comes down almost 100% on the side of planting milkweeds in the area to which they are native. That means don't plant tropical milkweed in Southern California. Do not. And you will make our butters much happier and healthier. So the reasons are, number one, tropical milkweed, when planted in temperate areas, does not die back in winter. This allows a parasite, Ophrocystis electroscira, or OE it's being called. It builds up season after season on the plant. This occurs because the curassavica remains evergreen, allowing for the OE levels to build up season after season to dangerous levels, which can then transfer to the larva. They do transfer to the larva when they hatch. OE parasite buildup in adult monarchs has been linked to lower migration success, as well as reductions in body mass, deformation, lower lifespan, reduced mating success, and flight ability reduction.
Deadly.
Boy. Yeah, it's very bad. Number two, tropical milkweed naturally has a denser concentration of cardenolide. Now, monarchs have a natural defense against predators, which is cardenolide. It is a chemical which poisons their predators. However, the monarch is immune to it at the proper levels. But when that chemical, which protects the monarch, becomes too high, it builds up and becomes toxic when it comes from the tropical milkweed because, number one, the tropical milkweed has a much denser concentration of it, and it overwinters, so they can keep on eating, and it keeps adding to the monarch's concentration in their bodies, and it poisons the monarchs. The local milkweeds have a naturally lower concentration of cardenolide, and it doesn't build up to toxic levels. Number three. See, I want you to all understand this. The curassavica is very bad. Because curassavica is evergreen, the monarchs tend to stay around this attractive food supply and nesting plant. This disrupts the migration and overwintering patterns, which normally causes the butters to fatten up in wintering spot along our coast and then rest there until March. The presence of the tropical milkweed can spur monarchs to breed when they should be overwintering, thus weakening that group because they cannot stand the cold weather if they come out during that time. Number four. It has been suggested that it's okay to plant tropical milkweed out of its native range if the gardener cuts the plant back to below the leaves at the end of the season, thus mimicking dormancy. This, of course, eliminates the OE on those leaves. That has a good argument. However, the huge problem with this tactic is the butterfly lover. I don't know any monarch lover who will cut off and put into the trash milkweed stems with eggs and larvae. And yet, for this tactic to work, that's exactly what has to happen.
Yeah,
no one's going to do that.
No.
And we take pity on them, but what we're doing is propagating the disease. It's like Typhoid Mary. It is far, far easier on everyone, especially the monarchs, to go along with the emerging and strong science that says the best option is to go native. Now, for those of you who may still be doubters, if you want to look this up, I will credit the Xerces Society Monarch Conservation Site, Monarch Joint Venture Site, the AAAS Science Today, that is Science Magazine, and Rogers Gardens. Ron Vanderhoff has written a very clear article on this subject. And so if anyone has questions after that, please call us up and we'd be delighted to talk with you.
Yeah. And he also has his article on the Rogers Garden website.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I found it. And that's great. And you can read it at your leisure.
So I hope you're all convinced.
Yeah, I sure am. More than ever. Wow. All those multiple reasons. Plus, they're supposed to be flying south, right, to Mexico?
No. Eastern population comes from Canada down the East Coast and into Mexico. That's the huge migration, like 2,400 miles. It takes many generations of monarchs to make that migration. But our population that is west of the Rockies, west of the Great Divide, goes from the Rockies and south towards the warmer climate, and they actually, nesting sites are San Clemente, Dana Point, trees along the very mild climate Southern California coastline. Yeah, in fact, it's been even proposed that people should not plant any milkweed, even if you're determined to have them, don't have them near the coast.
Wow, because Well, and then also Pacific Grove. I was up there one time,
yes,
and they were just thick in the trees.
Yes.
That it must be a microclimate where it's just what they love.
Yeah. Moderate winter temperatures. And they don't go completely dormant. They flutter about, they're already fattened up. Okay. And it takes several generations, again, not as many as the East Coast because their flight isn't as far. But it takes more than one generation, to two or three, in fact, to get to the wintering site where they congregate. And if you go on the Xerces site, you will find nesting sites. They'll list national parks where you can go along the coast and see them.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like that time in Pacific Grove, but I think they're way down.
Oh, yeah.
This was 20 years ago, and they were
thick.
Oh,
how lucky for you.
Yeah, thick in the trees, but now there's probably not so many. But yeah, this monarch thing is a real issue, and we need to get the population back up.
Yeah.
So
we can't lose a whole species.
Yeah. I planted it, the vesicularis, by seed, and it grew up to about an eighth of an inch. I came out one morning, it was gone. I don't know what caterpillar or lizard or who else.
Hill bugs like to eat those.
Okay. That must be what happened, but I was so disappointed. So now I think I'm going to start with, a 4-inch pot or something like that.
Yeah, in the kitchen window.
Yeah.
And get them to a good size and then go. Yeah. And by the way, you mentioned that there are two. There's actually four Asclepias that are native to this area. They are Asclepia California, which blooms April to July, Areocarpa, or woolly or Indian milkweed, woolly pod or Indian, it has two different names, May to October, fascicularis, the narrowleaf milkweed, which we have here at Rogers Gardens, and the speciosa, or the showy milkweed, May to September. Two of these are the easier ones to get a hold of, the speciosa and the fascicularis. So, we do sell them here at Rogers Gardens.
Yeah, tell me about how much you bought. You bought all existing.
Oh, well, yeah, we bought everything that was available from growers around at one point when Ron first put out his article, and they sold out. We sold them. Of course, we had the exchange program, too. That helped a lot. People were bringing in buckets full of the wrong milkweed and going out with the right ones, which was really satisfying to see.
Yeah, I think you said they sold out. You sold them out in 2 weeks. But
yeah. Out
there today, I saw you have a good collection
of
them. Yes,
and there will be more. This next week, I think, we'll be having a whole nother shipment coming in.
All right, I need to take a moment and give a station identification. This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access our show live or as podcast by going online to KUCI.org or on the Master Gardener website, which is mgorange.ucanr.edu, or just Google Master Gardeners, Orange County, California. This is the In the Garden show, produced by the UC Master Gardeners of Orange County, California. I'm DC Morgan, and I'm your host this morning with Lynn Hillman, who is a horticulturist and a landscape designer, and right now she's with Rogers Garden, so that's where we are today. And we're talking about what makes us go into the garden and the life in the garden, the beautiful, all the life that goes on that we want to keep in balance and appropriate. So Lynn, tell us more. Lynn, tell us some of the things that Rogers does to help promote the green scene and the green earth and helping our earth.
Rogers Gardens, with the intelligent guidance of Ron Vanderhoff, our general manager, has decided to have a mission with a mission statement, and that is that we will do no harm, we will be only organic, we will promote native gardening. We are green gardening leaders in this area. And some of the highlights on this and the ways we do it is every time a person comes into the nursery, we guide them in that direction. It's very important, and we are not bashful about saying, no, we don't want a synthetic lawn. Yes, it's nice and green, and it'll look lovely under your birch tree, but it just is not good for the earth to create yards and yards of more plastic and then slap it on your garden. And also that birch tree really wants a lot of water. So things like this, we are not bashful about guiding people into being good stewards of our local land. So we also conserve energy with the use of LED products. We use skylights in our buildings. And we have programmable timers to reduce electricity consumption from our lighting, and it has reduced consumption by 35% from before we did that. We don't use plastic bags. We use paper. We never have. We love to reuse and recycle your empty plastic containers. Even if you got it from another nursery or a grower, bring it here. And we will take it, we will recycle it, and we give donations to the Surfrider Foundation. We love only green cleaning supplies. We don't use anything that is harsh on the environment. We're celebrating our 10th year of not selling any synthetic fertilizers, insecticides, or other garden products that are not organic. We have been organic for a decade.
You're ahead of the game, I think.
Way ahead of the game. And it's important to us, very important to us. We don't sell invasive plants. If we discover something has been determined to be invasive, we put it in the trash. We're the only Orange County member of PlantRight, a voluntary effort to remove invasive plants from horticulture. Our entire store landscape has been converted to low water and California friendly. We have almost zero runoff thanks to high efficiency, low runoff irrigation equipment and design. Our community outreach and education programs allow us to promote and use natural, sustainable, and non-chemical approaches. We have a program for the local grammar schools around here. Any of the grammar school teachers within our school district can come in and say, we're doing a class. They don't even have to say why. They say, I want 6 seed packets of this, this, and this for my classroom, and we give it to them.
Great.
We give them the soil.
Okay.
And if we've even had one of our horticulturists out there to help them plant up planting gardens. So we really want people to be aware, and we're pushing that within our community.
And it's so important for children to know where their food and how things grow. I mean, I had never seen Brussels sprouts until I went to the Orange County Fair. And then I thought, that's how they grow.
No, they're pretty wild, aren't they?
City slickers here. So, yeah, it's really important to know, for children to know. So that's great that you benefit the local schools.
Yeah, it's very important. We get a lot of people come through Rogers Gardens. We pat ourselves on the back, I will say. I'll pat ourselves on the back and say we are well known. And when people come here, we want them to get the message of how to be good stewards of this earth and do it beautifully.
Yeah, it doesn't have to just be one or two things. You can add succulents and all kinds of. You just got to study up on the local native plants.
That's true. Just as I stated when I was talking about how my garden evolved from what it was to more awareness and shovel pruning, as they say, some plants and putting in other ones. Now, there was a drought recently.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually not finished. The governor declared it so, but that doesn't mean it actually is. It isn't, because our groundwater supply isn't up to where it should be yet. But when it was very active and declared to be so, a lot of the cities put in programs that if you exchanged some of your equipment, then they would give you money back.
Right.
And we were a very big promoter of this program, and I will endorse it. I installed that in my own garden, and I have found that I'm using slightly less water. My bills have gone down a bit, but the water is going deeper and my plants are healthier.
Ah, yeah.
So you might want to check with your local city and see if they're still promoting this, because it does pay. They will give you money back if that's still in the program. But you can save water, a lot of water, with the low-flow water heads. So,
yeah, and you want those roots to chase the water, so you want them to go down and not be superficial.
Right. Mm-hmm. Roots don't go through dry soil to look for water.
Yeah, so that's why they always say water, especially trees, low and slow.
Right.
So that the roots go down, down, down.
And, that's right.
And then they can have more moisture for when there is a dry spell.
Yeah. Yeah, they're better prepared. And then they can fight off those nasty bark beetles that we've all been aware of during that drought. They've backed off this year because we had all the rains and the trees are full of sap again. But when the sap supply goes down, the bark beetles move in.
Yeah, it's dry and they can get in there. And because the sap is a protection for the tree.
It actually pushes the beetles out with it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
A natural defense. That is wonderful.
Rogers Gardens also has classes, and they are free. Many of them, seminars are free. The classes are paid programs. But the seminars that I'm referring to, and probably most of you listening today have been to at least one of them in our amphitheater area. We discuss a myriad of topics, and we hope that they're timely to that time of year. And you can locate what's happening this Saturday on our website. Also on our website, you'll find videos.
I was amazed how many videos you have on there. I think there was over 100.
Yeah, and we keep making more.
That's great.
Yes, we have lots of videos, and we have had people come to us and say, personally, I've experienced people coming and saying, gosh, that really helped me know how to do whatever it was that was on that video. Ron Vanderhoff does put out on our website gardening checklists by the month. So you can look, oh, it's January. What do I do now in January? And you can look on there, and it'll get you started. Of course, once you're out there, you'll find other things to do, too. But that'll get you started.
Yeah, that is such a helpful guideline, because when I first started, it was like, I'm overwhelmed. Where do I start?
Yeah.
What do I do when?
True.
And this just gives you a little checklist. And you go, okay, did that. Fertilize the roses. Check. That's great.
Yeah, we can all do with a little help, can't we?
Yes, a little guidance.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So we also have instituted a whole new thing within the last year or so. We have specific garden areas. They're dedicated to drought-tolerant, bird and butterfly, statuary gardens. So we have, right now, we have a very beautiful, colorful display of coleus, only coleus, up in the area where very soon Santa will be building their train tracks for his train.
Oh, Santa. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's working on the train right now. It needs repair at the end of the season. But in the meantime, you might want to come in and see the beautiful swaths of color on our coleus garden.
And I walked by that on my way here, and oh, there's this chartreuse green one.
Yeah.
That it really, it's not just, you know, the dark green and the purpley ones anymore. Mm-hmm. They've got some really exotic colors. And that bright green just really, if you've got kind of a dark, shady spot, that really brings
it does
a lot of color and interest to that area.
Uh-huh. And then the bird and butterfly garden. And we identify on the signage, you can click on it. There's a little, I'm not computer savvy, but there you can click on it with your phone,
thing,
scan thing, and it will identify all the plants that are in that garden bed. And so in case you want to build it for yourself, and I've seen people do that.
I'm going to do that on my way out.
I thank you for having me in and talking about the wonderful things we do have here. Oh, I did forget to mention that we are transitioning into fall now. And so for you tomato fanatics, yes, we still have tomatoes that are good for planting this time of year. And even non-tomato fanatics, we have all the winter veggies are coming in. They're just starting. It's transitional, so give us a little time, but they are transitioning, and we do have plenty at this time.
Great. Well, I have learned a lot today, and I hope our audience has. So I just want to encourage you to get out and feel the serenity in your garden and just add, even if you add a plant or two once a month, before you know it, you're going to have a beautiful, serene place to go and have some quiet time and to watch the birds and the bees and all the life that goes on out there. I want to remind the community that you can email questions to the Master Gardeners Hotline, which is mgorange.ucanr.edu, and it's very helpful to send a photo or two along with your questions because they can really zoom in on narrowing it down and getting back to you. And it is based on scientific research from the UC system. And we have links on our website to pest problems. It's called Pest Notes Index, and it's just alphabetical, and you can go down there and find everything. And so you can do that at your own leisure as time permits. I just wanted to insert here, again, the different types of more beneficial milkweed for the monarch. And that would be the narrowleaf milkweed, the California milkweed, the Indian milkweed, and the showy milkweed. So you can Google those and you'll find the different colors and the different water requirements and get all the specifics on sun and bloom time and bloom season on that. Also, I wanted to reiterate that they do have a gardening checklist by month on the Rogers website. We also do what to do in the garden the first Thursday of every month. The Master Gardeners, Tina Spindler and Katrina, have an hour show on what to do in the garden that month. So that's the first Thursday of every month. But Rogers also has that checklist on their website. They also have videos, and just to name a few, there's one called Best Clean Air Plants for Home and Office, Seasonal Color Inspiration, and Bird and Butterfly Gardens. So just some added information for you. I hope that will help you. We've come to the close of our program. I really want to thank you, Lynn, for all your time and expertise and knowledge.
Well, it's been an honor to be asked. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome. And again, You can find our past shows, if you're interested in any other ones, on our website, mgorange.ucanr.edu. And thank you for listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, our In the Garden show, which is every Thursday, 8:30 to 9:30. So tune in again next week for another green topic. Thank you.